Okay, so here we are. First of all, I want to thank Robbie Goldsmith for all the technical assistance, and also for, I think this is his brainchild, so I want to thank Robbie Goldsmith also for initiating this this wonderful, wonderful endeavor. And it's a pleasure to be able to learn Torah with you and from you from wherever you are in the world. The topic that we're going to discuss tonight, or this afternoon, or this evening, or this morning, wherever you are in the world, is a topic of the Erev Tavshilin, which is particularly practical for us this Yom Tov, because as we know, Yom Tov for us is on Friday and Shabbos, and any time, or Friday is Yom Tov and Shabbos is just regular Shabbos, not Yom Tov as well, and we know that if we want to be able to cook or to do other types of preparation from Yom Tov to Shabbos, we have to make sure to make an Erev Tavshilin. So I'd like to speak about today what the Erev Tavshilin is, how it works, and some of the practical basics. So again, so we know that one of the main differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov is that we're allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov, but we're not allowed to prepare food on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that although we're allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov, that is only true for food that we're going to use that day. We're not allowed to prepare food from Yom Tov to Shabbos, Yom Tov to Chol, Yom Tov for any other day. So this presents us with a pretty difficult problem when it comes to a Shabbos that immediately follows a Yom Tov, or like this year, you have a two-day Yom Tov in one of the days, and school starts, is going to be a Shabbos. So what do we do? How can we be allowed to cook or to do other types of preparation on Yom Tov in order to, for us to be able to have food on Shabbos? So that is the Erev Tavshilin. The Erev Tavshilin is what allows us to cook, food, and allows us to have any or similar or other types of preparation as well on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So in this year, we'll discuss some of the details, some of the kim, some of the mechanics, and some of the basics of the halacha, of the halachot involved with the Erev Tavshilin. So to begin, we have to look at two different gemaras and two different machlokotot, two different machlokeses that are appear in the gemaras. The first machlokes is a gemara Maseches Pesachim, fitting for our holiday, which is on Daf Memvav Amud Bet, which tells us a machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chisda. And this machlokes that we're going to see between Rabba and Rav Chisda, although it's a tad bit complicated, what it does for us is it sets the stage for us to be able to understand what the Erev Tavshilin does. Why is it here? Why is it necessary? And what does it accomplish for us? So Rabba, he has that in order for us to be able to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, he has a three-step process, where Rav Chisda has a two-step process. And it's important for us to understand the difference between the two approaches because there are some practical applications later on. So let's begin with the approach of Rabba. Again, we're talking about a Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Daf Mem Vav Amud Bet, and this is the opinion of Rabba. Rabba says that in theory, it's prohibited on a Torah level to cook from Yom Tov to the next day, be it Chol, be it Shabbos, be it another day of Yom Tov. But he says, he introduces to us the principle of Hoel. Hoel literally means since, but Hoel is the first loophole into this halacha. And what Rabba says is that in practice, although cooking on one day or the other would be a problem, but because it's possible that guests might come on that first day of Yom Tov, it's possible that even though Friday is a Yom Tov, it's possible that in the afternoon of Friday, guests might come. So I'm going to be allowed to cook on Friday afternoon this year, on the first day of Yom Tov afternoon, because it's possible that guests might come, and my cooking might not be for Shabbos. It might only be for that day of Yom Tov. So says Rabba that cooking on Shabbos, on Yom Tov for Shabbos, although in theory is prohibited, because of the principle of Hoel, it becomes permitted. However, says Rabba, it still remains rabbinically prohibited. So we have a Torah prohibition of cooking from one day to the next, and then the principle of Hoel knocks it down to a rabbinic prohibition, and then, says Rabba, comes the Erev Tavshilin, and it permits it totally. So we have a three-step process. We have step number one. According to Rabba, it's prohibited to cook from one day to the next. Comes the principle of Hoel. Since Hoel is possible guests will come, since it's possible the guests would come, then it only becomes prohibited on a rabbinic level to cook from one day to the next, a loophole. And then, says Rabba, the Erev Tavshilin comes, and it permits it totally. So that's a three-step process of the Erev Tavshilin. So the Erev Tavshilin removes the final rabbinic prohibition that exists when cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbat. Now, Rav Chisda has a bit of a different approach. Rav Chisda says, yeah, there is a Torah prohibition of cooking from Yom Tov to another day, but that Torah prohibition of cooking from Yom Tov to the next day only applies from Yom Tov to Chol. Says Rav Chisda that on a Torah level, I'm not allowed to cook from a Wednesday that's Yom Tov to a Thursday that's Chol. But what Rav Chisda does say, that in terms of cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos, in terms of cooking in this year from our Friday to our Thursday, he says on a Torah level, that's permitted. It's only Aser Midrabanim. It's only a rabbinic prohibition. And then according to Rav Chisda, the Erev Tavshilin comes and removes that remaining rabbinic prohibition. So we only have a two-step process. Because initially, according to Rav Chisda, it was only prohibited on a Dirabana level to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, and comes the Erev Tavshil, and it permits you to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. So again, the difference between the approach of Rabba and Rav Chisda, that according to Rabba, our first opinion, initially it was prohibited on a Torah level to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Then we add in the idea of Hoel, the principle of Hoel, which makes it only a rabbinic prohibition, and you add on to that the Erev Tavshil, and it becomes permitted. Whereas according to Rav Chisda, there was never a Torah prohibition to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. And so one step, and then step number two, the Erev Tavshilin comes and allows us to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Now what's interesting is that there is a fascinating practical difference, a nafka mina lahalacha, between these two approaches, between the approach of Rabba and the approach of Chisda. And this nafka mina hinges on the concept of Hoel. Just to review, the concept of Hoel states that the reason why on a rabbinic level, the reason why on a Torah level, really, I'm allowed to cook from one day to the next is because guests might come. I'm allowed to wake up Friday morning, cook a very large meal, eat it, and then cook another whole meal, which is really, really for Shabbos, because it's possible guests would come. So says the Magen Avraham, a practical nafka mina would be, am I allowed to prepare food at the end of the first day of Yom Tov for the following Shabbos? Now, according to Rabbah, whose whole principle hinges on this idea of Hoel, and maybe guests are going to come, if there's only 15, 20 minutes left to Yom Tov, it's not realistic to assume that guests might come. So once it's not realistic to assume the guests might come, then it would not be allowed to put up a chulin to fry up some schnitzel with only 20 minutes left to Yom Tov in order to be able to have that food on Shabbos. However, the Magen Avraham points out, according to Chisda's approach, it would be totally fine, because there was never that principle of Hoel never existed in his construction of the mechanics of Erev Tavshilin. So one would be allowed to cook, even with 20 minutes left to Yom Tov, one would be allowed to put up the food to be able to prepare for the next day. For Shabbos, we'll talk about halacha l'maaseh, what's halachically best in just a few minutes. So again, we have this machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chisda of how the Erev Tavshilin works and what it comes to help us with. According to Rabba, we had a three-step approach, asa midoraisa, asa midrabanan, and then mutter, because the Erev Tavshilin, according to Rav Chisda, we only had a two-step approach, asa midrabanan, and then the Erev Tavshilin comes and makes a mutter. Okay, so that's machlokas number one. Put that on the side of your brain. Now we have another machlokas, a machlokas that follows in Beitza, that Tesvav Amid Aleph, which tells us what the Erev Tavshilin does and how it permits us to cook, what's the concept behind it, why did the Erev Tavshilin remove any existing rabbinic prohibition. So this is a machlokas between Rava and Rav Ashi. So again, we had before Rava and Rav Chisda. Now we have Rava and Rav Ashi. This is the Gemara Maseches Beitza, Daf Tesvav Amud Aleph. So here's what Rava says. Rava says that the reason why we have an Erev Tavshilin is in order to, I'm going to paraphrase, in order to safeguard the honor of Shabbos. Now here's what he says. He says, the Rabbanan were worried that someone will use all of her good food for Yom Tov, and she won't leave any good food aside for Shabbos. The Erev Tavshilin then comes and serves as a reminder for us to leave over some of our good food for Shabbos. So again, the reason why, according to Rava, the reason why the Erev Tavshilin is needed is because we have to remind ourselves that we have to make sure to leave over some of our good food for Shabbos, and by setting up the Erev Tavshilin, it reminds us to leave over some of our good food for Shabbos. That's the approach of Rava. Rav Ashi has a bit of a different approach. Rav Ashi says that the reason why the Rabbanan set it up, because he says the Rabbanan will worry that if they permitted cooking for Yom Tov to Shabbos, people might assume that it's also permitted to cook from Yom Tov to Chol. The Erev Tavshilin serves as a reminder for us that one is only permitted to cook from one day of Yom Tov to Shabbos, or one day of Yom Tov to the next day of Yom Tov, but one day of Yom Tov to Shabbos, in order to preserve the honor of Yom Tov. So again, Rav Ashi was nervous that if we permitted you to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, people might have assumed that it's permitted to cook from Yom Tov to Chol. So the reason we have the Erev Tavshilin in place is because the Erev Tavshilin reminds us that it's only when we have a Yom Tov to Shabbos that we're allowed to cook from one day to the next. But in any other circumstances, we would not be allowed to cook from one day to the next. So it's in order to kind of safeguard and preserve the honor of Yom Tov. Now, what's interesting to note is that, again, we have the machlokes between Rava and Rav Ashi. What is the purpose of the Erev Tavshilin? We have Rava saying that the Erev Tavshilin is necessary to preserve the honor of Shabbos. It reminds us to leave over some food for Shabbos. Whereas Rav Ashi was focused more on Yom Tov, he was concerned about preserving the honor of Yom Tov, and he said the reason why we need an Erev Tavshilin is to remind us that only when it comes from Yom Tov to Shabbos are we allowed to cook, but when it comes to Yom Tov to Chol, we would not be allowed to cook. Now, what's interesting, many of the Acharonim point out, is that the approach of Rav Ashi is very similar to the approach of Rav Chisda, which we mentioned before. Remember, Rav Chisda, he took Chol out of the equation. This whole idea of maybe guests would come, then it would be okay, then only then. So says Rav Ashi, who his whole concern with that to remind us that only when it comes to Yom Tov to Shabbos we're allowed to cook, but when it comes to Yom Tov to Chol we're not allowed to cook, that's very similar to the approach of Rav Chisda, who said that Hoil, this idea that maybe guests are going to come, that is not an issue. And why that's even more interesting is because many of the Acharonim, the Shaar HaTzion, the Beis Meir, the Be'er Lacha, they all mention that we paskin like Rav Ashi's approach. And if we follow the approach of Rav Ashi, which again tells us that the Erev Tavshilin is necessary to remind us that only when it comes to Yom Tov to Shabbos we're allowed to cook, but Yom Tov to Chol we're not allowed to cook, and if Rav Ashi seems to paskin like Rav Chisda, then our machlokas, which you mentioned before, about starting to cook your food 20 minutes before Shabbos begins, if that would be okay, according to Rav Chisda, it would be okay. So practically speaking, it sounds like, according to many of the Acharon and many of the later poskim, that one would be allowed to put up a cholent to fry some schnitzel, or I don't know, whatever it is that you enjoy having on Yom Tov, baking your challah, well, not on Pesach. You'd be allowed to do that really with only a couple minutes left to Yom Tov. So the Mishnah Berurah mentions that this could be true, that it might be possible that we paskin like Rav Chisda against Rabbah. It could be very possible that one would be allowed to cook in preparation for Shabbos, even with only 20 minutes left to Yom Tov. However, the Mishnah Berurah paskins in Tav Kuf Chav Zayin Sif Katan Gimel that ideally one should not rely on this idea. Really, you should make sure to prepare your food enough early enough in the day that in case we do paskin like Rabbah, in case Hoel is a factor, we would be able to have our food cooked in enough time for guests to enjoy it. So ideally, one should not follow the lenient approach of Rav Chisda that would allow someone to cook with only a few minutes left to Yom Tov. However, the Mishnah Berurah says in a time of need, if you have no choice, if this is the only way you can have food ready for Yom Tov, then you would be allowed to rely on the lenient approach. So that's really the only complicated part. That's really the only difficult part in terms of this discussion of Erev Tavshilin, just understanding the mechanics of it, understanding the basics of it, understanding where it comes from on a conceptual level. We had a machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Chisda about how many steps it takes to allow someone to cook food on Yom Tov for Shabbos. We had Rav Chisda who said it takes three steps. We have an Issa D'Oraisa, Hoel mix and Issa D'Rabbanan, and then we have the Erev Tavshilin, which makes it mutter, and then we have the approach of Rav Chisda, who really only had two steps. He said it's only Asa D'Rabbanan to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, comes the Erev Tavshilin and allows you to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. We mentioned a machlok between those two approaches about whether or not you're allowed to put up your cholent or your schnitzel or whatever you want with 20 minutes left to the holiday. We mentioned that according to Rabbah it would be a problem because Hoel, maybe guests would come, would not be a reality at that point, where according to Chizda would be okay. And then we mentioned the Halacha L'maisa, the Mishnah Berurah gives us room to be lenient, to follow the approach of Rav Chisda. However, he says, ideally, that's not what we should do. We should make sure that if we are going to be cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos, we should allow enough time in order to be able to serve that food for guests should they show up. Okay, so the next question, the next issue I want to talk about is, what is the Erev Tavshilin? What is it that serves as a reminder for us? Practically speaking, what do we have to prepare? What do we have to do? So the Rama mentions in Tav Kuf Chaf Zayin Sif Aleph that what an Erev Tavshilin really is some cooked foods that were cooked before Yom Tov for Shabbos. So it's almost as if, says Rama, that we begin our Shabbos preparations before Yom Tov begins. And then, says Rama, any further food preparation that we take place, that we engage in on Yom Tov, is really a continuation of what we started before Yom Tov. So again, this year, on Thursday afternoon, before the onset of the Yom Tov, I'll prepare my Erev Tavshilin, which we'll speak about, practically speaking, how that's done. And then the Erev Tavshilin serves as the beginning of our cooking process, and it's what allows us to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So what is it? What should we set aside? What kind of food should we prepare for Erev Tavshilin? So The Ramah tells us that Erev Tov Shilin usually consists of bread and a cooked item. We have bread, well, obviously not on Pesach. On Pesach, we have to have matzah, but bread and a cooked item. What is, why do we have to have bread and a cooked item? So the Mishnah Berurah comments on that Ramah. The reason why we have to have bread and a cooked item is because the two primary food preparation processes that we engage in is baking and cooking. So the cooked item lets us cook, and the baked item lets us bake. These two things together allows us to cook food and to bake foods for Shabbos and Yom Tov. What happens if you only have one of them? What happens if you only have a cooked food, you don't have a baked food, or only have a baked food and there's no cooked food? Is one of them enough? So Ramah tells us that if one only prepared a cooked item, you're fine. Really, a cooked item is the is enough to allow you to do any food preparations on Shabbos. Really, all you need is a cooked item. But some poskim are makpid that you should really go out of your way to have a baked item. But again, we can be makel that if you only have a cooked item, that would be enough. However, if you only have a baked item and you don't have a cooked item, that would not be enough. So if you only have, I don't know, whatever you're using, we'll discuss some possible things you can use for Erev Tov Shilin. But if you only have chal or if you only have bread, that would not be enough to allow you to prepare food from Yom Tov to Shabbos. But if you have, I don't know, a piece of chicken, a nice steak, a hamburger, an egg is what a lot of people use, that would be enough to allow you to both cook and to bake. However, the Minhag HaOlam, what most people do, and this is pretty much accepted universally, is that we go out of our way to try to make sure to have both a cooked item and a baked item. How much of that cooked item and that baked item do you have to have? Can I have just a little crumb of bread or a little crumb of matzah and a little like a little teeny piece of egg or a little teeny piece of chicken? The Shulchan Aruch tells us that the shear of the cooked item should be a kazayit. You should have at least a kazayit size of the cooked item. And the Ramah says, some say the bread should try to be kibetza. You should have kazayit and the kibetza. Those are ideally the two amounts of food you should have. And the Mishnah Berurah there comments that it's a hiddur mitzvah. Ideally, one should use a whole loaf of bread, which can be just a challah roll, or in our case, just a piece of matzah. And people try to have a what he calls a chashuv piece of meat or fish. You know, not just a little teeny piece of fish, not just a little teeny piece of meat, but, you know, a significant portion, a decent amount. And that would be enough to fulfill this obligation of Erev Tov Shilin. Welcome again to our new callers. If you can just press star 6. That mutes it so we won't hear any background noise. So again, the shear of the cooked time should be a kazayit, the shear of the baked time should be a kibetza. The Mishnah Berurah again points out that the hiddur mitzvah is to use a whole loaf of bread or even a small challah roll, as long as it's a complete item, and a piece of meat or a piece of fish. So again, just to review what we've set up to this point about what the Erev Tov Shilin is, it's a cooked item and a baked item. The cooked item allows us to cook, the baked item allows us to bake. If you only have a cooked item, that's fine. If you only have a baked item, that's not fine. You have to make sure to have at least a cooked item, and ideally both. The Be'er Halacha points out there in that same Siman, Taf Kuf Chaf Zayin, that ideally when you're preparing the food for the Erev Tov Shilin, you should specifically cook the item to be used for the Erev Tov Shilin. B'di'evet, it's not necessary, but that's what we should ideally do. Certainly when it comes to the cooked item, that's probably not so difficult. If you're using an egg, just boil the egg, or even if you're using a lot of eggs, just have in mind that one of the eggs will be for the Erev Tov Shilin. The baked item is obviously a bit more complicated. Many of us have not baked. Well, if you've been to Shabbat Fumim, you have baked matzah for Pesach, but many of us have not baked matzah for Pesach. Many of us don't bake bread, Erev Yom Tov. But the cooked item, if possible, should be cooked, ideally, specifically for the Erev Tov Shilin, the baked item as well. But again, that's a bit more complicated, not as easy. But b'di'evet, if not, if you just have a piece of, you already cooked your chicken, you just want to slice off the wing or the polka, that would also be enough to be an Erev Tov Shilin. So again, one cooked item, one baked item. A baked item lets you bake, cooked item makes you cooked. If you only have a cooked item, b'di'evet, that's good enough. We should have a whole piece of bread or a whole matzah and a chashuv piece of meat and a piece of fish. That is that is what's used as an Erev Tov Shilin. Okay, next question. When should I make the Erev Tov Shilin? When should I go about doing it? Can I order it, 5 months in advance to keep it in the freezer? The Shulchan Aruch tells us that ideally the Erev Tov Shilin should be made on Erev Yom Tov. You should make it in preparation. As mentioned before, the reason why we have the Erev Tov Shilin is that it shows a continuation of the preparation from before Yom Tov to Shabbos. It's the beginning of our Shabbos preparation. So said the Shulchan Aruch, ideally it should be as close to Shabbos as possible. You should really try to begin your Erev Tov Shilin before on Erev Yom Tov, before Yom Tov starts. A question that does come up sometimes is you prepare an Erev Tavshil, and let's say you have one of these Yom Tovs where you have two Shabbases and you need an Erev Tavshil for the first day and the second days. Ideally, each set of days should have their own Erev Tavshil, and you shouldn't take the first day's Erev Tavshil and rely on it for the second days. You should have one Erev Tavshil for each one of the holidays, each segment of the holiday. An interesting question that comes up when we discuss about when the Erev Tavshilin should be made, oftentimes, unfortunately, people forget to make the Erev Tavshilin. Sometimes you remember to make the Erev Tavshilin just as you finish lighting candles, or just as Shkia sets in. The Ramah tells us that that one can even make the Erev Tavshilin into Bein HaShemashos, even though Bein HaShemashos has already begun, even though Shkia has already passed. Even at the beginning, I don't want to say how long you can go into Bein HaShemashos, but even if you hit the beginning of Bein HaShemashos, the Erev Tavshilin can still be made. However, the Mishnah Berurah says once Baruch Hu of Ma'ariv is said, once you answer to Baruch Hu and Shul, or the time of Baruch Hu and Shul has already hit, the Erev Tavshilin can no longer be made. So once you try to go out of the way to make sure to have the Erev Tavshilin done in time, if you don't have it done in time, you can even make the Erev Tavshilin into Shkia, but once the congregation has said Baruch Hu, you run into trouble. A question that comes up sometimes is, let's say you've already brought in Shabbos, you and your wife and your family have already brought in Shabbos, maybe you made an early Shabbos, maybe you make an early Yom Tov, which is, might be a possibility, and so your friend is Daven Ma'ariv yet, but you have not Daven Ma'ariv yet. Many of the contemporary poskim say that a person who has not Daven Ma'ariv yet can make an Erev Tavshilin for his friend who has already Daven Ma'ariv. Another question that comes up often when we speak about Erev Tavshilin is, as we mentioned before, the wife lights the candles, or the mother lights the candles, and realizes, oh, I forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin. So some poskim say that a husband can probably make an Erev Tavshilin for his family, even if his wife has already lit candles. We can have that kind of that disconnect between when the wife is Mekabel Shabbos, when the husband is Mekabel Shabbos, when the father is Mekabel Shabbos, when the mother is Mekabel Shabbos, that even if the mother has already lit candles, there's room to allow the father, the husband, and the family to make the Erev Tavshilin to cover the rest of the family, or the whole family. So again, Erev Tavshilin should ideally be made right before Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov, or I'm going to say right before, a few hours before Yom Tov, and it can even be made into Shkia, but once Baruch Hu is said, once the time of Baruch Hu has come, you can no longer make your Erev Tavshilin. Okay, so how do I make the Erev Tavshilin? What is it? Practically speaking, what do I do? So basically, you take your piece of an art. We'll speak about Pesach. You take your matzah, you take your egg or your fish or your piece of meat. You put it together on a plate. Many people wrap it up in tinfoil. Maybe you should take one of the Sharpies and write on the Erev Tavshilin so you don't run into any problems that we'll speak about in a minute. And you pick up that plate and you say the bracha. You can open up any machzor, any sitter. You can easily access. You can easily find the bracha of the Erev Tavshilin. And you simply do that, and then your tavshilin is done. The bracha is bracha Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kidashem b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu al mitzvat eru. So you make that bracha. Then after making that bracha, there's a proclamation that we all say. The proclamation is, I'll read it in Aramaic, and then I'll I think I have it in English here also somewhere, that the Erev Tavshilin is b'din yehi shar lana la'afuye ulebashluhe ulatmune uladluke shragu takanu le'me'abadu v'kol tachanu miyom atavle shabata Lanu ulecho Yisrael hadaren ba'ir hazot. They basically say, with this eruv, we are now permitted to lafuye to cook levashule, to lafuye to bake levashule to cook latmune to do hatman ladluke shraga to light our candles ulatakanu lemebar kol tzachana miyomar tabla shabata to do any preparations from Shabbos to Chol for lana for us ulecho Yisrael hadaren ba'ir hazot for us and for all the Jewish people who live in our city, who live in our area. That's basically what you say. It is important, the Mishnah Berurah says, to recite the Erev Tavshilin in a language that you understand. If you want it to take effect, if you want to make a declaration that what you're doing allows you to cook and to bake and to do other sorts of preparation, it has to be in a language that you know. So, you can open up your art scroll, your trusty art scroll, or probably find it in the internet, and make the declaration not only in Aramaic, but make the declaration in English or Hebrew or British, whatever language you speak, and you'll be able to accomplish that goal. Mishnah Berurah does say that if by accident you did not make the proclamation, the Erev Tavshilin is still acceptable b'diavad. So again, just to review, how do you make the Erev Tavshilin? Take that piece of chicken or that egg, take the challah, put it on a plate, wrap it up in tin foil, pick it up, say the bracha, it's a proclamation, and then once you made that proclamation, mazel tov, you have made an Erev Tavshilin. So again, just a quick review as we're running out of time. We mentioned the machlokes with Rabban and Rav Chisda about the two-step process, the three-step process. We then discussed some interesting nafka mina about preparing right towards the end of Yom Tov as Shabbos begins to enter. We said that b'diavad it's okay, l'chachil, you should not do that. We also spoke about what is the Erev Tavshilin. We mentioned it's a cooked food to allow us to cook, a baked food to allow us to bake. We said min haka'olim to use both. We then spoke about when should the Erev Tavshilin be made. We said it should be made Erev Yom Tov, but b'diavad it can even be made into Shkia. And we just spoke now about how to make the Erev Tavshilin. Just we mentioned just a couple other important issues, and then we will wish everyone a good moed, a moedim simcha. Who makes the Erev Tavshilin? So tells us again, it's the next subtopic. Who makes the Erev Tavshilin? Basically, it's anyone who wants to cook on Yom Tov or Shabbos should make an Erev Tavshilin. Anyone. If you want to cook on Yom Tov to Shabbos, you have to make an Erev Tavshilin. Now the question that comes up is: let's say you are going away. You're going to be in a hotel for Yom Tov. You're going to be at your parents, at your brother, at your uncle, Samuel. You're going to be somewhere for Yom Tov. Do you have to make an Erev Tavshilin? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that really, again, it's all on top of Chav Zayin, even just to allow you to light candles for Shabbos, you should really be making an Erev Tavshilin. Let me just say that again. That the Shulchan Aruch said that b'diavad it's okay if you don't, that you really don't have to have an Erev Tavshilin to allow you to light candles. However, Shulchan Aruch says some people are machmir, and the Mishnah Berurah says one should be machmir, that if the only thing you're going to be doing in preparation for Shabbos on Yom Tov, because we know you can't light candles on Shabbos, you have to light candles before Shabbos. So really, when are you lighting your Shabbos candle? You're lighting your Shabbos candles on Yom Tov. So really, although the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to make an Erev Tavshilin, but some people are machmir, and the Mishnah Berurah tells us that that one should be machmir, that if the only malacha you're going to be doing on Yom Tov for Shabbos is candle lighting, one should be machmir to make an Erev Tavshilin. However, many poskim say that no bracha is made on the Erev Tavshilin under those circumstances. If the only thing that you're going to be doing is lighting candles, then you can take that piece of chicken and that piece of matzah, put them on a plate, but you don't make any bracha. You can make the declaration, there's no problem with that. That's not a bracha. We're not worried about a bracha levatal, and that would be enough. Practically speaking, this becomes an issue in hotels. If someone's going to be in a hotel for Yom Tov, so what do they do about candle lighting? So I saw just two suggestions about how one can get around the problem of Erev Tavshilin if you're going to be in a hotel. One way to get around the problem, one way to deal with the problem, is simply to find the mashgiach of the hotel, find the cook, and when he makes the Erev Tavshilin for the hotel, is if you just participate in it, you go there with him, you say amen to the bracha, you know, you just do something, you participate in his Erev Tavshilin, and that would allow you to light your Shabbos candles. Another suggestion that I saw some posts can make, I think I saw this in the name of Rav Osner, who passed away on the Leila Seder, that he says, Rav Osner, that just make your own Erev Tavshilin in your hotel room. It's not a big deal. You know, breakfast, there's the 3,000 hard-boiled eggs at breakfast. Just grab, assuming your hotel allows it, or else it'll be Ganeim, and that could be a problem, making Erev Tavshilin with something that's stolen. But if your hotel allows it, grab an egg, grab a piece of matzah, bring it to your room, wrap it up in a tinfoil, and you can make your Erev Tavshilin yourself. But again, without a bracha, if the only reason why you're making your Erev Tavshilin is for candle lighting. Rav Moshe Feinstein does point out that even if you don't plan on cooking, even if you don't plan on lighting any candles, he says that it's always a good idea to make an Erev Tavshilin without a bracha, because it's always a good idea to make an Erev Tavshilin. And if you're not going to be cooking, without a bracha, you should make the Erev Tavshilin without a bracha. The reason is because you never know what's going to come up. You never know what's going to happen. You always want to leave yourself that window to allow you to do some preparations from Yom Tov to Shabbos. So again, of course, the can be made. The bracha should not be made if you're not doing any cooking, and that would take care of the problem of lighting candles and any other preparation that would be necessary. And just again, who makes the Erev Tavshilin? The Mishnah Berurah tells us that the head of the household is the person who makes the Erev Tavshilin. I guess that's the question in each individual household, who runs the household, the mother and the father. Growing up, my father always made the Erev Tavshilin, and I make the Erev Tavshilin in my family. But again, the head of the household, the person who makes the Erev Tavshilin. One per family, one per household seems like it covers everybody. So again, who makes the Erev Tavshilin? Anyone who wants to cook. The Shulchan Aruch said that really you don't need it for lighting candles, but it's a good idea to do it, says the Mishnah, and this becomes a problem in hotels. So we should go out of our way to try to make sure to make an Erev Tavshilin, even when we're in a hotel, to cover all of our bases when it comes to lighting our candles. Okay, just a couple more points. The Erev Tavshilin, what do we do with the Erev Tavshilin? You know, now that we have it, what should we do with it? So one funny situation that actually came up one time in my family is that what happens if someone accidentally ate the Erev Tavshilin before you did your cooking? You know, you Friday morning, someone came home from shul, went to the Vasikim Minyan, went to the early Minyan, and he wants to have some breakfast. And, of course, nothing is better in the Turetsky family than a piece of meat for breakfast. So what happens if you eat your piece of meat, eat your Erev Tavshilin, and you have your matzah and you have your meat for Kiddush on Friday morning? The problem is that if there's less than a kazayis left, then your Erev Tavshilin is finished. You can't use it anymore. It's done. If it doesn't exist, then you can't use it. However, if you left some food over, if there's a little bit left from your Kiddush, then that would be okay. And the Erev Tavshilin, when you make it, you should try to make it in such a way that people won't run into these problems. People won't accidentally eat their Erev Tavshilin. Let's say one began cooking, one started cooking, they put up the chicken soup, and then someone came and accidentally ate the Erev or lost the Erev. So you can finish cooking that dish that you began, but you can't do any other cooking afterwards. You'd be very careful, as we mentioned before, take that Sharpie and write on top of the tinfoil, this is the Erev Tavshilin, do not eat it. That's all about Yom Tov. What about on Shabbos? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that after all the food for Shabbos has been prepared, you can eat Erev Tavshilin, and some people go out of their way and they use Erev Tavshilin on Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah tells us that it's best to use the bread or the matzah for Lech HaMishnah on Shabbos because, that shows that the food, the Erev Tavshilin, really was the beginning of the food preparation for Shabbos that you began on Erev Yom Tov. So people go out of their way. It's a nice thing. It's something that was already used for a mitzvah, so use it for another mitzvah. It was used for the mitzvah Erev Tavshilin, and we use it again for Lech HaMishnah on Shabbos. That's a big deal, a big hitter. Something that we should all try to do. Two more quick points. I think I said that already five times. There is a concept known as the rabbi's Erev, the Erev that the rabbi makes. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that it's a mitzvah for the Gadol Be'ir, the big rabbi in the city, to make an Erev Tavshilin for everyone in the city to cover anyone who forgot to make an Erev or was unable to make the Erev Tavshilin. So if Chas V'Shalom, you forget or whatever it is, the circumstances were beyond your control, you did not make an Erev Tavshilin, there is a rabbi's Erev, and that is something that people can be somech on. However, the Shulchan Aruch tells us if one could have made an Erev Tavshilin and just decided to rely on the Erev Tavshilin of the rabbi, that's not good. The only time you're allowed to use the rabbi's Erev is if you forgot or if circumstances didn't allow you to make one. However, the Mishnah Berurah tells us that only works for the first time. Beyond the first time, you're considered to be posheya, you're considered to be negligent, says the Mishnah Berurah, and the Erev Tavshilin would not work. So for that first time you forget, you're a young married couple and you forget to make Erev Tavshilin on the first Yom Tov, so you can rely on the Rav's Erev and you'd be allowed to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. However, if you've been married already 50 years and you've been forgetting for 50 years, three regalim, then that would be a problem. You would not be allowed to rely on the rabbi's Erev Tavshilin. As far as I know, that each city, each town has one rabbi's Erev, as far as I know. But, it could be that in different communities do different things. I think in Shavim we only have one. I think in Teaneck there's only one. That's my impression. But, again, every community does their own thing. So there is that idea of having the rabbi's Erev everyone can rely upon, but one should definitely try not to, and you only have one pass. You only have that one opportunity. The final issue that comes up when we discuss Erev Tavshilin is non-food preparation. So everything we've been discussing up to this point about the Erev Tavshilin has been a discussion about preparing food from Yom Tov to Shabbos. What about non-food-related preparation? What about setting the table? What about rolling the Sefer Torah? The Gabbai in the shul, you want to roll the Sefer Torah. What about folding up your clothes? They can be all nice for Shabbos. That's a running machlokas. That's a big machlokas. We have some poskim who are machmir, and they say you can only do preparation that's food-related. That's the Magen Avraham believes, and that's what the Magen Avraham says. There are other poskim who are more lenient. They say that even preparations that are not food-related may be done on Yom Tov Shabbos, providing the Erev Tavshilin. Rabbi Kiva Eger, Paskins like that, the Maharshal, Paskins like that. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Maharshal when it comes to folding clothes, that there is room to be mekel. Again, it's a running machlokes in the Acharonim, whether or not you can use the Erev Tavshilin to do any non-food-related preparations. You should contact your local Orthodox rabbi. It's my impression that many post-game, I'm not a local Orthodox rabbi, I'm not a post-take for sure, but my impression is that many people are making when it comes to this. So perhaps one would be allowed to set the table, perhaps. Again, I'm saying perhaps. Perhaps one would be allowed to fold their clothing. Perhaps one would be allowed to roll Sefer Torah. But again, you can contact your local Orthodox rabbi or your favorite Google Halacha site for guidance. I'm joking, of course, for guidance when it comes to that. So that's the last issue. Just to review, the last issue was the non-food related preparations running machlokes. Many post-game are make it. We'll just do a quickly, just a quick rundown of what we said, and then we'll open up to any questions. We began with the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chisda, which was kind of mirrored with the machlokes later on in the Gemara Beitza between Rabba and Rav Ashi about what is the Erev Tavshil and how does it work. We had a two-step process or a three-step process. We spoke about a possible napkamina, about preparing food very close to the end of Yom Tov. We said ideally that should not be done. However, there's going to be mekel. We then discussed what it is. We said it's a cooked item and a baked item. Ideally, you should have both. If you only have the cooked item, that would be enough. What do people use? People use matzah, people use bread, people use chicken, people use meat, people use eggs. All of those are acceptable things you should do. You said the Erev Tavshilin should be made close to Yom Tov. We mentioned that it can even be made into Shkia. We discussed how to make the Erev Tavshilin. You take that piece of matzah, that piece of bread, and that piece of egg, and you put that full egg, and you put it on the plate, wrap it up in tinfoil, write Erev Tavshilin, do not eat. And then you make the bracha and declaration, the proclamation should be made in the language that you understand. We discussed who made it, who should make the Erev Tavshilin, anyone who wants to cook. We said that even if you're not going to be cooking, but just lighting candles, you should make it. And then we quoted Moshe, who says, even if you're going to be doing nothing, you should still prepare it. And the gadol, the head of the household alone, should be making it. We discussed that you shouldn't eat it until Shabbos, but on Shabbos you should eat it. That's a big deal. We discussed the rabbi's Eruv, which allows us a one-time pass. And we discussed non-food-related items. That is basically the topic of Erev Tavshilin in a nutshell. Not a peanut, because that might be kidney oats, but in a other type of nutshell. And I'm happy to take any questions. Just remember to unmute yourself if you want to ask any questions. If not, you can email me with any questions. My email address is gturetsky, G-T-U-R-E-T-S-K-Y, @gmail.com. I'll be happy to take any follow-up questions. Okay, any questions?